Oh, hey, I'm so glad that you found us. My name's Michael, and I get to be the pastor at Shepherd's Community United Methodist Church in Lakeland, Florida. You're listening to the It's Better When You're Here podcast, where every week we upload the messages that are preached at our church every Sunday. We hope by listening to this, you feel safe, heard, and loved by the God that created you. We hope this message makes an impact in your life. If listening to this makes a difference, reach out to us and connect with us either on social media or on our website, shepherdsumc.com. All right, here's the message.
Good morning, everyone. Morning. Hey, that was impressive. You're awake. That's nice. You ever get the ones that are like, good morning, and no one says it, and then they're like, you can do better than that. Come on. Don't you want to like throw your coffee at them when they do that? Or is it just me? I'm not a morning person, so maybe it's just me. First of all, thank you for letting me be here with you today and being a part of your great community. First of all, Michael's not here, so I can do it. Although Mandy's here, and she won't like it. Every time that I speak here, or anytime that I speak for a friend, one thing for me is if I'm going to come speak for you, it means because I really care about you. I love you. I believe in you. Michael is one of my favorite people on the planet. He is one of, exactly. I hope that you know how blessed you are to have him and his family as a part of your congregation, leading you. He is has the purest heart of anyone that I know. And although Mandy might disagree with that, I don't know, she knows him better than me. He's so pure and great and loving. And one thing that pastors don't often get is reminding that people love them. Oftentimes their job is taking on their congregation or their the people that follow them, taking on their struggles, their stress, all of those things, and helping carry that burden. And less often do they get, thank you for being that person for me. Thank you for being our pastor. Thank you for being the person that we can come to that leads us well and all of that. And so I would encourage you, please, today when he's going to be here at some point near the end, he's teaching a class at the other campus. If you would, just for me, because I will also get enjoyment out of how uncomfortable he will be. Just if you would, just bombard him a little bit with love and use your words to express to him how much you care for him and his leadership and all that. And I will not tell you to do that to Mandy because I don't want to get hit. But actually do tell her that you care for her, yes. But, you know, outside of that. Again, thank you for letting me be here and be a part of this, this service with you today. About 8 years ago, if you are going to children's church, you can go. If you children's church, you can take people going to church. If you're serving or your kids, sorry about that. I'm not even paying attention to that back wall. That's my fault. All good. Thank you. Thank you for waving because I'm blind. And so that helps. So about 8 years ago, one of my best friends, a guy that was like a big brother to me, some of you may or may not know, I run a nonprofit organization. We do an initiative called the Laundry Project. Shepherds has been a part of that in the past with us. And this guy, his name was Mark Thrash. He helped start this with me 17 years ago. One of these people that no matter what was happening in life, I knew that if I was having a terrible day, terrible week, whatever it is, if I called Mark, when I'm done with that phone call, I'm gonna feel much better about my day, my life, my circumstance, whatever it was. Because Mark was the ultimate encourager. He was the ultimate, what I would call, hope dealer. It just came from within him. About 8 years ago, he was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer that 6 months from the diagnosis, he died, lost his battle to that. And even 8 years later, as I'm standing here telling you the story, I could feel the emotion of it for me of how difficult that was to lose him. for many, many reasons. One of which, though, in the 8 years since he's gone, every time that I've needed some encouragement, some hope, I've wanted to call him. And he's not there for me to call anymore. And during his struggle and his fight against cancer, one of the most amazing things to me to watch about him was even in the midst of his toughest struggle, his darkest valley, his darkest days, was how much, I don't want to say none of that mattered to him, but how much that took a backseat to his encouragement to other people. So much so that people just started calling it, just nicknamed him Hope Dealer. They were like, I'm gonna call my Hope Dealer because I need some hope today. And he's in the middle of chemo and all of these things. And he walked in such a way and lived in such a way that just hope poured out of him. I get a call from him one day, and I knew exactly what the call was, and I just felt it, that he was calling me to ask me to do his funeral. And I didn't really want to, because I knew, like, as a pastor, I've done many funerals, people that I loved and cared for. There is a level in that kind of role of, like, you got to put emotions to the back seat and be the, you know, the adult in the room, if you will. And I knew with his funeral, I was going to have a hard time doing that. But I took this call and he says, hey man, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to. I want you to do my funeral. And I was like, okay. And he said, I don't want a traditional funeral. I don't want it to be like somber and sad. And if you knew Mark, which I know you didn't, but if I could explain Mark to you, kind of a very bombastic, would have been a great front man for a rock band. Just high energy, nothing he did was traditional. And he was a Methodist pastor as well, but nothing he did was traditional. And he was like, I want kind of like a rock concert. Like, could you do a rock concert for my funeral? And I was like, I don't know if I can pull that off, but got it. Nothing traditional. It's going to be a party. It'll be a celebration of who you are. There's 900 people attended this funeral, which was mind-blowing to me. First of all, that 900 people, that he affected 900 different people's lives, and at 44 years old. And the one thing that I knew that I was not going to do at or for his funeral was to read Psalm 23. Because in my mind, that was the most traditional thing that I could do, right? Because it's kind of in church world, it's our like kind of intrinsic or just like, yeah, somber, something sad happens, we read Psalm 23, right? I don't know why it became that, but it has. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that because I want a traditional thing and I want to honor that. And then I read Psalm 23 and I got real mad at God, because when I read it that time, I realized, oh, I have to read Psalm 23. Because Psalm 23 is more than what we make it. I would argue it's actually the opposite of how we traditionally view and use Psalm 23 in our faith. Because the 23rd Psalm is full of hope that we just gloss over. We all know, most of us, if we grew up in church, we probably all know the scripture, right? Most of us could probably almost say the whole thing by heart, especially the first line. What's the first line? Anybody? The Lord is my shepherd, right? We know that. Jesus often referred to himself throughout scripture as the good shepherd, referred to us as his followers, as his sheep, that the people that follow him, he is our shepherd. the sheep know my voice. When I speak, they know, my true sheep know my voice, right? Growing up in church, like, shepherding didn't really mean anything to me because who shepherds these days? Like, who, you know, like, I never did that. So studying and interesting. So I want to show you a couple images real quick just to get this picture in your head. The first image here is kind of modern depiction of shepherding. This is an actual picture of someone shepherding their sheep in the side of this mountain, which weirdly is actually a recreation of an old photo that they found of Jesus. I know it doesn't make sense, but this is the next image. We'll actually show you that original photo of Jesus. I don't know how they got him on camera back then, but they did. And the next image really has nothing to do with this, but I just know that because Michael loves dad jokes, if you know anything about him, he will laugh at the dumbest dad joke you can make. And this is the image of the dumbest dad joke I could find for him. May not be Jesus, but I am a good shepherd. So shepherding is a fascinating thing, especially its place in our faith, in our history of faith. David, as we know of King David later on, David was a shepherd. He kind of started off his life as a shepherd. Because in that time, in his day, the youngest person in the family tended to end up being the shepherd. Wasn't the job anyone in the family wanted. Because it's messy, it's not fun, it's somewhat boring. You're just out in a field making sure sheep don't die, making sure that they don't wander off. Sometimes maybe some excitement. If you read the Psalms, it's basically like David's journal of his experiences. There's a lot of talk about fighting off lions to take care of these sheep. That sounds exciting, also terrifying. But it wasn't a job that anyone wanted. But what we see through David is a lot of lessons that he learned as a shepherd, which brought me to Psalm 23. And I'd like us to read it together. If you have your own Bible and you want to flip to that, it'll also be on the screen for you to see as well. You don't have to read it out loud, but I'm just going to read it and follow along with me. So at Thrash, prepping for my buddy Mark Thrash's funeral, reading this and going, oh, wow, I see this in a whole new light of a way that I've never experienced it. So Psalm 23 says this, "The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. He lets me rest in green meadows. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength. He guides me along right paths, bringing honor to his name. Even when I walk through the darkest valley, I will not be afraid, for you are close beside me." Sidebar, I think that's the reason why we use it at funerals so much, why we make it so somber, because it is this, hey, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. What a sequence of words. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. We kind of take that and attribute it to death. Even though I'm facing death, I will not fear because you are with me. It goes on, he says, "You prepare a feast for me in the presence of my enemies. You honor me by anointing my head with oil. My cup overflows with blessings. Surely your goodness and unfailing love will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will live in the house of the Lord forever." What a passage. There's a few things that I've learned out of this that when I was preparing for his funeral and I read this passage against the backdrop of who Mark was and people calling him a hope dealer, what I realized in reading this passage, prepping for that, was that this passage is the ultimate hope passage. It's full of hope. It's riddled with it. We tend to go negative with it, but it's really bright and incredible for lessons for us to apply to our life. Right out of the gate, "The Lord is my shepherd," which, as Jesus referred to as a sheep, understand sheep are kind of a weird animal, right? Like, they're top heavy, they're clumsy, they kind of wander. They need a lot of direction because they'll just kind of wander off. They make great clothes, but they're this kind of weird animal. They're not pack animals. Like, no one in that day would go, you know what, we got to move some heavy stuff from this place to that place. Gather up the sheep. Let's strap some stuff to their back, carry them over. No one would do that, right? They're not pack animals. Like, you would use a mule or a horse or something like that. But what's interesting about us as the analogy of sheep, we try to do all the things that sheep are not meant to be. We try to carry the stress and burdens of our world and of our day and of our life and of the people around us. It'd be kind of like you got to move, right? And calling your friend that drives a Prius to help you move. Like, no one would do that, right? I mean, maybe. I'm sorry if you drive a Prius. It's not an insult. I'm just saying, not great for moving big, heavy things, right? You'd call the person, like, who do I know that has the biggest truck possible? That's who I'm going to call. Also, because I want to get it done all in one shot, so I'm going to strap everything to this truck. Even if it doesn't fit, I'm going to, the hood, whatever, I'm going to get it there. But we tend to operate in that way. We tend to step out of what we are meant to be as sheep and the Lord as our shepherd. Because the shepherd's job is very simple in this situation. Shepherds are protective. Their job is to protect these animals, to make sure that they can live in peace in this valley, feed, and just enjoy life. Because that shepherd is always on the lookout, protecting and watching, fighting off the danger. They're nurturing. When that sheep is hurt or injured or sick, that shepherd's job is to nurture that sheep back to health. That shepherd is guides them from the valley that they are in to the next valley they need to be at, gives them direction. The shepherd is their provider. Anything that sheep needs, that shepherd's job is to provide. That's what they do. And the sheep's job solely is to exist in peace, knowing that the shepherd has got it taken care of. And that's exactly what David pulls out of his experience and puts into this passage for us. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. He lets me rest in green meadows. Some translations say it. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. There's this connotation there of, like, we as human beings, we are always trying to take the reins, right? We're trying to drive the car ourselves. And I think God oftentimes just kind of lets us think that we're driving the car, right? Like, if you had a toddler at one point, you probably had the little fake steering wheel thing that they would play with, you know, because as kids, we like to mimic what's going on around us. And we think as a toddler, like, hey, I'm driving the car. No, you're not. That would be stupid. and the real adult is driving the car. I think God just sometimes hands us the fake steering wheel, just so we feel like we're contributing, right? But he's really got the steering wheel for us. And he's saying to us, you can just take a nap in the passenger seat. I've got this. I know that life is chaotic and there's a lot of things going on. Life is stressful. There's all kinds of things that we carry and burdens. But guess what? You can just set that in the back seat. I've got it. And enjoy the journey that we are on together. And I'm going to take you to the places that you need to go. And I'm going to put you in the positions that you need to be. Because I am your shepherd. He makes me to lie down in green meadows. It's almost like he has to force us to rest and to live at peace. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength. He guides me along right paths, bringing honor to his name. Even when I walk through the darkest valley, I will not be afraid, for you are close beside me. Your rod and your staff protect and comfort me. What I learned from this is, here's one of the big ideas that you can take home with you. Hope is about relinquishing control. We think hope is about us holding on to it. We talk about hope in this very abstract way, right? But hope is very tangible. We see it every day embodied in the people around us. Anytime we encourage someone, anytime we bring a meal to someone who's struggling, that is hope tangible. Anytime we help guide someone, that is hope. Hope is relinquishing control. As sheep, we have to understand and learn to relinquish our control to the shepherd, to the good shepherd. When I was a teenager and then becoming an intern at the church that I grew up in and became one of the pastors there for a while, we used to, I grew up in a Baptist church, and we would do a missions conference every year. We'd bring in these missionaries from around the world that we supported as a church, and we would bless them and do some fun things with them. We'd listen to their stories and watch their videos and photos and all this. We had this one guy, this one missionary that we would bring every year because he was a nut job, in a good way. He was just crazy. He was like the craziest old man I think I've ever known. And he's one of these guys that if he called you and you answered the phone, he'd just be mid-story. Like, he wouldn't say, hey, his name was C.W. Hoy. Hey, it's C.W., what's going on? There was no introduction to anything. It was just, hello? And then I was standing on the edge of the cliff, Jason. What? Are you standing on the edge of a cliff right now? Is everything okay? Like, you just had to catch up because he was this wild, just his brain, just very energetic. But you used to tell this story of when he first became a missionary in the 70s. He was a pastor of a small church in Texas, decided God's calling me to be a missionary in Mexico. Sells everything. He and his wife moved to Mexico. And they didn't go to like Mexico City or like a civilized area. They went to like the rural, mountainous, middle of nowhere, tribal areas of Mexico. He kind of embedded himself with this one tribe that's at the base of this mountain. And in the 70s, I cannot remember the name of this film, but it was a very famous religious film that they would play. And this was kind of like, in Baptist world especially, they would play this film and it'd be, you know, we like to guilt you into coming to Jesus. So we want to make you feel real bad about the fact that you're going to go to hell one day. So that's what this film was about, essentially. But it was very popular back then. And so he was using this film, and because also he didn't really speak the language. And so he was using every tool that he could. So this tribe, at the base of this mountain, was like, hey, there's another tribe up at the top of this mountain. They've never seen a white man. Two, they need to hear your message as well. And he's like, great, let's do it. And so they do the switchback like trail up to the top of this mountain, counter this tribe. He sets up his thing, plays the film, does this church service, all that kind of stuff. By the time it's all done, it's nighttime. It's deep into nighttime. It's pitch black out there. These Mexican Indians that he's with, they all grab, like, pack up their stuff, and they just take off back down the mountain. And then he realizes, I don't know how to get back down the mountain. These people here, I don't know where they went off to there. I can't see anything. I kind of know where the entrance to this trail is. I got to get back down the mountain. And so he starts trying to make his way down this trail. Can't see anything. And he would tell the story like, I'm scared because it's this tiny trail. It's on the edge of a mountain going down the side. I'm just hoping my way down this thing. And he says he's kind of going along, and after a couple minutes, he feels this tug on his shoulder. And so he's like, and it's, you know, narrow. He can't see anything. He kind of tries to turn around. He can't really see behind him, but he feels this tug. And then just like a tap on his left shoulder, kind of pushing him to his right. And so I guess I got to go this way. So he starts going this way. Eventually he gets tugged again, pushed in a different direction. It takes him all night to make his way down this mountain. Of just these like pulls on one shoulder or the other, taps on shoulders or the other. And he kind of just like embraces like, okay, something is guiding me down. I don't know why, but great. Happy to have it so I don't die. And so it takes him all night. He finally gets to the bottom, makes his way out. Sun starts coming up. You know, he can see some things. He can turn around and he can see what's going on. And one of these tribesmen had stayed behind, realized he's lost. And actually wasn't even one from, it was one of the ones from the village at the top that noticed, oh, he doesn't know where he's going. I can't speak a language to him, so I'm going to help him. He turns around, this guy's just carrying like a walking stick, like staff. What he realizes the entire time down the mountain, anytime that he would come to an edge where he was about to step off the side and fall off the mountain, that this guy would just use his staff and pull him back from the edge and tap him on the shoulder of like, the trail turns right now, so you need to turn right so you don't walk off the edge. And that story for him was exactly what this passage says. Your rod and your staff protect and comfort me. Because he said, I wish I would have realized at the top of the mountain that I don't have to worry because the shepherd has me. He's guiding me along the way. Because hope is relinquishing control. The other thing that hope is for us is that hope is not just futuristic. Hope is right now. Look at this next part of the passage there in Psalm 23. You prepare a feast for me in the presence of my enemies. I love this sentence. Because if you ever watched, like, if you ever studied anything about ancient battles and various cultures when they go to war, there's always feast when they say that. There's usually a feast at the beginning because, hey, we're about to go to war. This might be our last meal. And then there would be a feast and a celebration at the end of this battle. Because, hey, guys, we made it. Everyone else is dead, but we're alive. Let's celebrate that we're alive, right? The meal always happened before or after. No one in the middle of the battle was going, you know, I'm a little hungry. You guys keep fighting. I'm going to sit here and eat some lunch. It didn't happen, right? That's not how that works. But what this passage is saying and what God is saying to us about the shepherd is that that's exactly what he's doing for us. In the midst of all the chaos, in the midst of all the stress, in the midst of all the struggle of life, in the midst of just the heaviness that our world carries oftentimes and the days that we currently live in, some of the heaviness and stress that we experience throughout life, what God is saying is, in the middle of all that, I have prepared a table of hope for you. And you can sit at this table and you can dine and you can live in peace. Because the hope that I have for you is not just one day when this life is over and you are on to the next thing, when your soul reunites with God. It's not just hope for the future one day. It's hope for right now. That I have hope for you now. That peace is attainable now. And I think there's a reason for that. Because as good sheep, we are to be learning from our shepherd. Jesus would say, follow me. That follow me was not just about following me around. But in the analogy of him being the good shepherd, what he's saying is follow me because I'm going to guide you and I'm going to teach you. And then one day you are also going to be a shepherd to someone else. There are going to be moments in your life where you are going to shepherd other people. And what you're going to do in that moment is you're going to impart to them the hope that I have given to you. And you have the opportunity sitting in the middle of the battle, the middle of the chaos and everything, and enjoying the meal of peace that God has prepared for you. And you get to invite other people to the table with you. Because God's table is big and vast and all inviting. And he looks to us as his sheep to bring others to the table. Because you know what else is incredible about sheep? They're extremely communal. They're not great on their own. but they're so great together because they also help protect each other. They are communal with one another. We are at our best as human beings when we are communal, because hope is found in that commune together. And finally, hope is active. We often talk about hope in this abstract way, right? Like I mentioned before. But hope is active. Hope is ongoing. It's working. Hope is meant to be given and experienced. And it's really simple. Because just like with Mark, when he was going through his chemotherapy and he was doing his battle, his hope was active. Because if I called him, someone else called him to check on him, by the end of that phone call, he was encouraging us. He was sending us things that we need. And the organization that I run, the Laundry Project, that for me is the most tangible action of hope that I can do, is recognizing that the people in that community are struggling for something as simple as clean laundry, and I have the ability to meet that need for them. That is hope being active. Because we need struggle, we need chaos to experience the hope that God has for us. Everything is fine all the time. What do we need hope for? What do we need grace for? We grow and learn and become better representations of Jesus Christ through our own struggle. Because in that struggle, we experience the hope that the Good Shepherd has for us. And then we, in turn, are able to give that hope to others. An old Danish philosopher named Soren Kierkegaard once wrote, "Then comes affliction to awaken the dreamer." We find hope in the middle of our struggle. If we allow ourselves to relinquish control and allow Jesus, the Good Shepherd, to shepherd us along and guide us along, and then recognize that that hope for me is right now in the middle of it. Not just, oh man, one day when this life is over, things are going to be great and I'm going to be happy again. No, that hope is now. Because that's what Jesus has for us as the Good Shepherd. So when it comes to Psalm 23, when I went to Mark's funeral and I told his family, look, I know he didn't want me to do traditional stuff, but I have to read this because what I learned from Mark, what God taught me through his life, was all three of those lessons. Hope is about relinquishing control. Mark said, I can't control what's happening. I can go to the doctors, I can take the medicine, I can do everything I can. The things that I can do, but I cannot do the things that I cannot do. And I'm gonna let God take care of it and sort it. And in the midst of that, because hope is right now for me, in the midst of my struggle, in the midst, as I am walking through the valley of death, I will fear no evil. I will fear nothing that is in my future because I have hope right now. And that hope with Mark was active because he was giving that hope away that he was experiencing. And if I could give you anything to leave with you today, ask yourself, how can you make hope active in your life, experiencing it now, and grabbing onto it and sitting at the table of hope that God has prepared for you? And how can you be active about giving that hope to others around you? It doesn't have to be complicated. Like I mentioned at the beginning with Michael, here he is.
Love you.
Keep going.
Hope is found in the smallest of acts. Because hope is active. And we have the opportunity to activate that hope, not just here, but in your everyday lives, in the schools that we go to, the jobs that we go to, the neighborhoods that we live in. Because as good sheep, we follow the shepherd. So think this week, how can you activate hope for those around you? And maybe for yourself. Maybe you need that hope right now in this moment of your own life. The good shepherd is there and here for you. Let's bow our heads. Hey, God, thank you so much.
All right, friends. I hope you heard something in today's message that made an impact in your life, helped you know that you're loved by God, and inspired you to do something about the gospel that is offered to you. Now receive this blessing as you go. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.